Once I told her, I said, you know, you went through a lot of us.
Oh, man. I went through, when I worked at Harvey Street, there was a girl down there that was going to school. She had lived there when she was 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah. You
know? So she was living in the same place that she grew up when she went back to school.
My niece is like 26 now, and she remembers she was from,
okay.
You know, that. So. I know I got a few years on me, too.
Oh, yeah. We all do. That's amazing. I was trying to think of different names, because you probably don't remember Joshua Jane?
No, I don't remember.
Okay, he was one of the workers that was...
I saw his name in the newsletter. When was he around? 80s sometime,
yeah.
I think?
He was one of the student workers that took a weed whacker and was cleaning along all the water lines and stuff.
Okay.
And there was another guy that, I can't think of his name, Bob something. I ran into him. I was jogging out to Governor's Island when I was working out at Central Wisconsin Center. Because I went from the university. I went out to Central Wisconsin. To Central Wisconsin for 15 years. Now I'm back with the university down on the physical plant.
Mm.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I was talking to Joe Cooper. He remembered, you know, we were trying to track you down. We knew you knew quite a bit about the gardens before, you know, our last contact.
Uh-huh.
I'll let you get your goal with the interview.
We're just didn't even starting to talk about it. We barely begun.
I just got here.
Eric Olmanson and I, you know, we kind of worked with you right at the end. Because I was here right, you know, probably the last year or two before you left.
Mm-hmm. I would have left here in 94.
The last chairman probably was, you know, her name is Navazio. You know, that was about, you know, and I think you were just leaving then.
Or Julie Schneider.
Okay, that's who I was trying to think of.
Julie Schneider. I talked to her, and she said that I had to talk to you.
Yeah. She liked point beer.
She liked point beer.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I remember right, yeah, bib overalls and point beer.
Good gardening clothes.
Yeah.
Good gardening.
Well,
relaxation.
After
gardening. Yep. So what were some of the projects you remember working on?
Well, I was just doing stakes in those days, rounding up stakes, and, you know, you used to store them below your apartment over there and stuff. Eric worked with him a little bit closer, Eric, than I did. I was just on the committee, and I was just, you know, doing stakes and stuff. But I remember how much you did for us, and, like, you know, we were completely reliant on it at the time.
It's continuity. Okay. That was a big thing that I provided was continuity, because once the procedures got established, I'm going to guess they're pretty similar now as they were 20 years ago.
Yeah, the only thing we changed was, you know, we don't do any tilling now.
Okay.
You know, we went to no-till, which made it easier because then we don't have that set up.
You don't have to clean up either.
Yeah.
Depending.
But you were here when they had bonfires and stuff. And
What were the bonfires? I mean, how long did those go on? They were like 2 years or?
You can't quote me on a number of years.
That doesn't matter. I want to know what they're like, not how.
Okay, well, what it amounted to.
Yeah.
Is that at the first freeze, or would be the first part of October, last part of September, first part of October, and a lot of times you didn't really have a substantially killing frost. You would have frost, but it wouldn't kill everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so people always want to garden up. Well, you'd set a date, and then you'd have a cleanup, so everybody's supposed to come out here. And so at the last minute, you know, at 8:30 for the 9 o'clock cleanup, people would be out here trying to get the last of their vegetables and their cold crops and what have you. And then you'd come along as a group and you start down at one end and just walk through all the gardens and pull out all the sticks, all the stones. And it looks to me like they're still doing what they did. Wherever they can find them, they get. It's amazing how big a logs people find for their pole beams and what have you. There was a lot of wood and a lot of. And then you'd have metal stakes. You'd have tools and hoses and all that kind of stuff.
That people just wouldn't take.
They either moved away or they don't think about it. And then at that time, the garden had, the university would come in and they would spread manure on it. They would disc it and plow it and then till it up, you know, disc it again in the spring. Well, they didn't want to have wire and posts and, you know, run over tools and what have you, so there was a big cleanup. We would take the big dump truck from the university because I worked for housing, so I could drive it without having to worry about liability and what have you. So we would take the big truck, drive right down the rows, and
you'd drive through the garden?
Right through the garden, right down through the rows.
That was all, you know, we were killing everything.
All right.
Yeah. So had to be down to bare ground so that they wouldn't wreck any of their equipment. Mm-hmm. And so you would go through and you'd pull everything out of the garden.
Just toss it into the dump truck as you drive it.
And you'd haul it up here and you would separate out. You'd throw the shovels and the rakes and the stuff off the side. And after a while, people would learn that's a good place to pick up new tools or better tools. You know, so people would kind of upgrade their tools. And who cared? I mean, you know, nobody, you know, couldn't prove whose tools they were. So you'd put the tools off the side. And then you would have your woven wire and different wire. You'd pull that off the side. A lot of stakes and sticks. And what are you going to do with them? You'd pile them all up on the pile and have a big old bonfire.
Nice.
That was a lot of fun.
Did a lot of people come? Or is it, did you cook things? Did you, was it a potluck bonfire? Beers and bonfires? Or no? Families?
more family.
Okay.
There were two distinct factions. You had those little kids that wanted to have a little kid-friendly, and then you had people that wanted to, you know, get drunk and jump in the fire and all that kind of stuff. So it's hard to, you know.
Yeah.
So really what we tried to do was run a fire up, burn it down some, let the little kids do their marshmallow toasting and what have you, okay? Eventually they'd go away, and then I think the most fun was had probably by the boys that were, 8, 10, 12 years old? And they would, you know, that's the one time they could play with fire.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, sure, go ahead, throw some more fire. You know, nobody cared, you were just trying to burn it up.
Yeah, that's fun. So that was like, where was that? Where
that
the shed is now?
That was where the shed is now. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of the open place. It was, you know, gravel, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There used to be a compost pile up there, too. I don't know if that's still up there or not.
They're all up there now.
Okay.
All of them.
I think that's kind of what started it. They wanted to put some composting in there. Mm. And so they put a fence area in there. And then after that composting got going, and it was a good area to have storage area, because they got more and more equipment. Needed a place to store it. But that was just built when I left. I think it was smaller than that when they first built it. Did they rebuild that? Or was it always that big? Always been that size?
Yeah, that was right about that time, when you left.
And that just appeared? Do you know the story behind how we got the shed? From what Eric said, you all were really surprised, and you said it too. Like, all of a sudden this shed showed up, and
Gifford
you weren't really
sure
that
you wanted. Gifford was the chairman, so he might have had more information.
Mm. Yeah.
But, you know, basically it was just like, you know, I talked to Gifford and he just said, we got a shed. I said, where'd that come from? He said, I think housing gave it to us.
Yeah, it depends. When you work with the university, it's a funny thing. I've been employed by the state for 30-some years.
Yeah.
And people will say no, 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 and they'll say no. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden you'll get one that you come along and you don't know what you did different. All of a sudden, oh, yeah. And away it goes. You know, it just... That'll happen with being able to use a truck or trying to get a weed eater or any number of things.
Uh-huh.
And that's not just the Eagle Heights guards. That's, you know, even as a state employee. Mm-hmm. Some days you couldn't get a screwdriver, and other times, you know, something you don't even think you'd ever get.
Yeah.
I gardened up here over the years. Yeah, it seems to be, whoever comes in new with it, something changes. You don't know why, or they're just more, friendly or something.
So what else did your... Working for the university and being a gardener, what else could you get for the gardens, or how else did you mediate that relationship?
They were two different things.
They were two different things completely.
They didn't.
Because Eric made it sound as if because you worked, you could drive the truck, for instance.
Well,
you could do it. Yeah.
But that's, I think that people would have gotten it anyway, but you might have had to get a designated person to go to safety.
Training and things.
Right. But I remember you were our major contact. Right. Pretty much contacted you, and you just made it happen.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, when you've been around for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever.
Yep.
The guys know you. Everybody knows who you are, what you do, and so if you go and say, and most of the time, communication people ask for stuff, but I'll say I want a green teapot, all right, and somebody else hears you want a green teapot, and they don't have them. They've got red and brown ones.
Yeah.
But no, I can't do it. So, it just facilitated because people know who it was. And they, if I asked for some aerators, that was one thing that was that might have been just before your time. When they first put these up here, they didn't have aerators on the faucets.
Mm.
And so then if you lost water pressure and people had their hoses hooked up, they could suck water back in there.
Mm.
So I remember that was a big deal. We had to go around and buy aerators. Or backflow preventers, and screw them on every single one of the spigots up here so that if you left the hose on and it on, you couldn't go. Mm-hmm. And that's probably still true today.
Yeah, I think there's something, I think Timothy Kolosik. I talked to him. He was, I think, right around 78 or 79, and he mentioned that that was the big thing, that you had to go around and put these copper things on every single one of them. Because it was city water still, right, from the hydrant?
Right.
So when did you got it?
Somebody said it's not hooked up to the hydrant, but Eric... originally.
Right. Well, originally they just hooked onto the fire hydrant right down there, above ground.
Yeah.
And then went underground, went across the road.
Uh-huh.
Well, when you've got a fire hydrant on, if the fire department comes and wants to use it, they have to shut it back off so that they can put their hoses onto it. Otherwise, you're going to have water flying out of there. And so now I believe they dug down beside it and just they're tied in legally down below the frost line.
Yeah.
And is there a meter on it? I don't even know.
I don't know for sure if there's a meter because
I don't know.
When they, I think they put a meter on it, but you know they didn't own charges for water still.
They might just know for their, the university is great for putting, getting information, not necessarily doing anything with it.
Do you know when they put the, you know, were you around when they did some of the plumbing work, or, I mean the pipes, or was that?
I was here when they upgraded it, but they've always been here. Mm.
So when did they, when, what did that, in, upgrading it?
Well, you come across the road, and then I think it's in a 2.5-inch pipe that comes across, and it was starting to rust out.
Through here.
And then they branch off up. But so it's like any maintenance thing, or any time you have water piping, plumbing, you've got constant maintenance on it. So, but it wasn't a big deal. The only thing I remember is I ordered the wrong pipe, and it came in like 4-inch. On a big truck, we said, we can't even lift that stuff. I think it's 2.5 inch. But don't quote me on what size it is.
No, I mean, we can go back and look at it. I think it's probably about right.
So what's geography got to do with gardens?
Well, I'm writing, my advisor is an environmental historian. And so geography is, so I'm writing an environmental history about of the gardens and what people, what it's been as a place to people and how it's changed over time and its relationship with the university and, yeah, so why people garden, what they get out of this place,
It's real, real similar.
Mm-hmm.
More, you know, just looks like another little greenhouse or something down there. Oh, any any physical structure wasn't here when I was here. It was just a hillside that you gardened at.
Yeah, Cal's took a chunk of it. There was a controversy at one point, you know, when they built the Walnut Street plant.
Okay.
And they they took a chunk of our land.
Yeah. And then there used to be, you probably, why, so one question I've had, and maybe it's just because it's, because it was plowed every year, but the number of rows and the configuration of the rows, especially up on the hillside, changed year by year, it seems, from the map. So, like, you would add 1,100 and 1,200 rows, and then you'd take away the 1,200 row, and then you threw out a peninsula. So how did...
I'm sure that has to do with the number of requests for garden plots. Mm-hmm. So you would up, you know, you would make as many plots as you had people registered for them.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I think there were plots down in here, too, at one time.
Yeah, I think they took some of it away for the sandbox and for the arbor. So we lost some plots then.
And some people wanted one real close to the walkway, so they could just walk across from the parking lot and into their garden. Others wanted to be farther up on hill, so they wouldn't have people going through their gardens.
Yep.
Just depending on your point of view.
Somebody said also that, well, how were plots assigned when you started in the 70s and 80s?
Like, oh, okay. The same thing. They went down, they plowed them all, and so it was just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
yeah,
6,
just number.
And then you just had a big working party, everybody came out here, and you figured, I forget how they exactly came up with the measurements, but you took the row size and how many square feet
and you marked, and you marked
they
them
just
out.
Took strings and stakes, and you marked them out and pounded stakes in there and put numbers in there. And one thing they did do, if which was one of the times they did it, they started with, you know, like 101, 102, 103, and people confused them with their apartment numbers. So we did away with that and went with the rows, and the rows are 100, 200, 300, but they started with 150, 250, 350, because there's no numbers that high in the apartment complex. In the 900s, you get fairly high, but I think they're in the 940s.
But they went back to the 101s and 102s, so. We still have people confused. They can get
okay, but that was the point of is starting with the
150.
Right, because there is no 150. It'd be like 110 or I don't know. Yeah, probably 109.
109 maybe.
Something like that. So there's no, so if you started with a 50, so you'd have 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 series rows.
Uh-huh.
It has nothing to do with your apartment.
Uh-huh.
It's just a plot number.
And then they had like T-stakes for each, some of the rows are wider than the others, so, we'd have a set of, set of strings and sticks, so, you ran it out this way and then to the center and eyeballed it and staked it that way. Then they got precise with the engineering department and all hell broke loose. Now we got
Never got somebody to come out and survey it precisely.
So now you get a permanent plot. Once you get a plot, you stay with it?
You can stay with it then.
Okay.
And then so that way you can put the asparagus and rhubarb and stuff like that in.
I'd always wanted to put a demonstration plot in up here somewhere.
Mm.
I thought that would be kind of interesting for people that from out of country.
Mm-hmm.
For most of us that are native to the Midwest, asparagus, rhubarb, raspberries, all that kind of stuff, we just take it for granted.
Yeah.
But somebody that's in a warm climate probably never saw that stuff, so it'd be interesting to see what it is.
Little signs. What are some of your favorite garden stories or memories? Anything.
Controversial or not?
Controversial or not?
We don't have any controversy.
Never any controversy?
Well, a little bit.
A little, what are the little bits of it?
Not much. Mostly it's border disputes.
Yeah.
Because one guy would assume that you could, most people assumed correctly that when you marked out the plots, that the stake was here. So you would back off 6 inches or a foot, and you assume the other guy's going to back off 6 inches or a foot, and you got a couple foot path between your garden.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some people thought, right up to that line was theirs. They didn't want to have access across there. So, but I mean, there were small things. And I don't even think that people worried about kids too much, because I don't think too many kids came out and really went
in. Far enough away that you don't have too much. Every once in a while.
Once in a while, but I mean,
issue,
it just,
not too often.
No, I don't remember anything that's a big controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Hardest thing was keeping the things watered when you had a dry year. You'd stand out here and let the mosquitoes eat you. You say, I'm going to give this a good soaking. I'll soak it for 20 minutes. You just stand out here and play sprinkler. And the mosquitoes would come out, and guess what? Those plants could get by with 10 minutes worth of water. Probably one of the best memories, believe it or not, was a simple thing.
Yeah.
I don't remember where I was. I was watering someplace. One of the garden plots, a hummingbird came down and had a little woven wire fence for a stake up for some beans. And that was a good memory, having a hummingbird fly in while you watered.
There's some, we now have, I don't know if you had hawks, we now have resident red-tail hawks that hang out.
A pair of cranes, too.
And a pair of cranes with one, with one chick that wanders around and eats everybody's strawberries, which makes them pretty mad, but it's still nice.
Yeah, they're nice. They have walked around. They stomped a couple of my things already.
Oh, have they?
No big deal.
Oh, well.
I have a couple more.
So what did you grow in your plot? And why did you decide to garden?
I've always gardened.
You've always gardened.
I mean, I'm almost native from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Loganville, so I grew up about 50 miles from there.
Oh, yeah.
And so we always had a garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things you do.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't anymore because my daughter's 37 years old. And I don't need to garden because we don't freeze anything anymore.
Last time I saw you, she was just graduating.
Okay. From high school or college?
I think so, high school.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. That would have been, that would have been 91. I think she graduated.
Yeah, that's about when I was, first started.
I think she graduated in 91.
The Canadian stuff.
So what did you grow? Beans and...
Beans, peas.
Peas. All the usual.
Carrots, radishes, leaf lettuce. And we also, this was big, when you also grew the alfalfa sprouts and the mung beans underneath your kitchen sink.
Oh, yeah.
Which in Eagle Heights was perfect because the little built-in refrigerators were underneath your kitchen sink, so you had a great heat source. Every time the refrigerator came, kept it nice and warm in there. So you you could really grow.
Mm,
sprouts
good
very
sprouts.
Well in Eagle Heights garden in kitchens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's neat.
You still have your anchor collection?
Oh, yeah.
He was a scuba diver, used to pull them out of Mendota.
Yeah, they're
anchors
getting,
out of Mendota, wow. Yeah.
Well, yep. All the fishermen go onto rock piles.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So they're going to be good citizens, and they tie up real short so they don't bang at the next guy that's fishing there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your rope sits and goes like this over the rock pile.
Uh-huh.
Pretty soon, point, you know, and they're floating away, bumping into their neighbor that didn't want to bump into it. They say a couple choice words, and there's an anchor down there. So scuba divers, in the spring of the year, you can actually see. You can probably see from me to that stone, or is that a stone, or that's a block of wood?
Yeah, it's a block of
wood. But you can see from here to there just as clear as we can now.
Wow.
So you'll find, you know, and now it's down from me to you, we'd have to look at it. Okay, yeah, we can, I guess we can see something. And then eventually it gets down to here, you know, and say, well, we can't dive anymore because
okay.
You can't even see if you're in the, if you're in the water or hitting a rock or the bottom. You know,
see. Sounding good. Were there tree islands? Were
the
those trees
are,
there?
Yes.
Both of them? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I say.
Where you dump the rocks, a lot of rocks, right? Or no? In some old maps, they say rock pile. Nothing about tree islands. But
I don't think we necessarily dropped them. I remember more along
there. More along there.
There were
okay.
a lot in there, too. Yeah.
But
okay,
there
yeah.
again, that's, you know, it's human nature. Every year we would clean it off, set it off the side. Every year the people would grab the rocks and they would go find new sticks and new pieces of slab wood, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And out they'd go, and then every fall we'd turn mm-hmm. around and haul them back. So we weren't really concerned. You know, wherever was handy, you know,
mm-hmm.
same thing. You're not, don't want to do any more work than mm-hmm. you have to. So you just throw them to the nearest place.
Yeah.
You know, next year they'll move.
They'll move again. Yeah, that's really true.
Now even the university, we're building a rock wall up there.
I saw that on the website there.
Yeah.
One of them looks pretty
good. That's the old law school. They dumped in the woods.
A lot of stuff dumped in the woods here.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They still got the orchard and everything on the other side of the hill over
there? They cut down most of it, but they're replacing it. Some of it, you know,
they have, yeah,
there was a bigger orchard
some
at one time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you used to pick apples over there? Or no? Just knew it was over there.
It's one of those things that you walk through it, you know, mm-hmm. bird watching or jogging or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
When I came, I live over on Old Sauk Road, so I came by Brennan's on University uh-huh. Avenue and came along Lake Mendota Drive.
Uh-huh.
And that's the same place I used to jog, because when I lived in 816, which is right up here on
yep.
the corner. And so we'd go jogging down the Memorial Union and back out to Picnic Point and come back to here, or
uh-huh.
we'd jog out to Baker Lane along Lake Mendota Drive.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful,
oh, yeah.
beautiful little run in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the other things we're fighting is comfrey right now, and I don't think that was a problem earlier. I don't know if you knew when.
No, I don't.
Comfrey is just
this. That's been getting steadily worse.
It's been getting steadily worse, I know.
Oh, that's because you're not. That's because you're not plowing everything up every year.
Yeah.
My dad used to grow comfrey for the chickens, and he'd put a little cage around it because they would just completely eat it to pieces. But you put a little cage around it, and they would reach through, and they could, you know, depending on the size of the cage.
Uh-huh.
It was good green food for chickens.
Oh.
I don't even know what comfrey looks like now, to tell you the truth.
I was trying to see if I
could find it. I don't know that I see
it's kind of a
here.
Leaf, it, I would have
fuzzy
thought,
leaves.
I thought it would look similar to that, but not. Is that Jerusalem artichoke, or what is that right there?
Yeah, oh. That's a
no,
prairie coneflower or something. It's one of the,
okay,
the
it.
Top.
I've been digging it out already.
It doesn't matter.
Well, we'll probably see if we take a walk around. But, it probably is because we haven't been plowing every year. Because when it gets a hold, it's not.
Yeah, it'll spread.
Yeah, it's not going to let go at all.
I can tell you an interesting side that's not really garden-related, but you know what Creeping Charlie is?
Mm, yeah.
In my house where I am now, I cannot get rid of it.
Mm.
I tried and tried for years to get it to grow on the edge of 816 where the shop wasn't up around that corner. The kids would run around in bushes down to the trash containers and back.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always trying to make it grow there. Couldn't get that stuff to grow.
Mm.
Now I can't kill it. So, same thing here, I'm sure. You know, once something gets established.
Uh-huh.
At one time, they didn't want us to plant Jerusalem artichokes because they were afraid they were going to spread.
Mm-hmm.
So that looks like a little sunflower, and then the root, you eat the roots and all that good stuff, which is good. But that was going to spread, so they didn't want people to plant that.
Yeah, I think they kept a lot of the invasive on those. I'm not sure if that one is or not. Mint's still on the list.
Mint's still on the list, yep.
You can't get rid of that no matter what, anyhow.
No, it's all over this place.
Keep coming up.
But that's probably a good sign if that stuff wants to keep coming back. Because if it didn't come back, then you'd know you've got a problem with your soil. Gardening is a lot of work. Well, not a lot, but you have to do it every day or every other day, or you'll get behind, and once you're behind, you'll never get caught up.
Yeah. Were there a lot of abandoned plots when you, I mean, through the time you were here? Do you remember?
Not a lot. If I had to give a percentage, probably 10% every year got abandoned. They weren't abandoned, but their maintenance efforts became less and less as the season went on. So they'd go out there in the first week, 3 weeks, everybody was gone home. After a month or so, halfway through the season, it was a little iffy. And then when cleanup day came, then everybody would go out there and, where's my hole? Oh, there must be something valuable in here that I can get out of these, like tomatoes or cabbage heads.
If they just let it, the low-maintenance gardening. Unconnected to that, but I'm just remembering, around 1980, and I haven't found this, I think there might have been some land, like the university wanted to take back some of the garden's land, or we weren't able to do things. Do you remember anything, any land ownership tensions, like right when you got here, like 79, 80 or something?
I remember something, but it wasn't a real big deal.
You remember anything about it?
No, it
wasn't big.
You got to remember, the university is filled with politics. Every single day, there is a dispute over something. I worked down, well, you know where the new Wimmer and the new hospital and all that stuff is? They're brand new building. And people are fighting over, you know, who gets what room or, you know, which view or how many square feet. And they always do that. And it's been doing that since I started in 1977. There's always been a dispute over land or room or equipment, whatever.
I'm sorry, when you started, was the physical plant in charge of Picnic Point, or was it the...
I couldn't tell you for sure.
It's gone through different hands over the years.
I couldn't tell you who. Mainly because I got a bad attitude. I don't care who. I know what my job is. And I do a good job, and you know that's that. I'm the perfect state employee. Everybody knows me. Everybody knows I do a good job, but nobody knows exactly what my job is.
That's good.
That is good.
That's a good way to go.
And we were paying rent for this land from Cal's when you were first started.
They paid rent to somebody. I don't know who. I never got in on the administrative end of it, other than, you know, with the laying out the roll lines and stuff like that. But I mean, because of my job as a maintenance man in Eagle Heights, it just made sense that whenever somebody needed assistance or question with the water or the hoses or plumbing or whatever, they'd go through. It's just easy to ask me, and I said, well, yeah, I'll go talk to the boss and see what we can do. And Fritz Lutze was the manager most of the time that I worked, in fact, all the time that I worked here. And he was real people-oriented, so he was a good guy for the job. And so anything that he could do that didn't cost the university a lot of money, he would do.
He would just do for the gardens?
Now if there's a plumbing problem, we have to go through all sorts of, you know, normal channels.
Oh, you probably have to call cars. You probably have to call cars, and then cars calls the plumbing shop. The plumbing shop comes out.
And the bills are large.
Bills are large. It's the university. I don't know. I'm a union guy, but the union has got a stranglehold on the University of Madison campus like you wouldn't believe. That's when I was out of Central Wisconsin, just like Eagle Heights here. I was changing aerators and repairing faucets out here. On campus now, I don't do that. The plumbers do it down there. You know, I can't even change an aerator on a faucet. When I was out at the CWC, I could install the faucets, install the toilets, you know, do some sweating of pipes. Now I don't touch anything. Just the difference in the application of the work rules.
So what were some of the major plumbing things you had to do? Probably just regular plumbing issues,
just
faucets and...
out in the garden?
Yeah.
Primarily leaks. I would guess 90% of the plumbing problems out here are leaks. People walk along and there's still a lot of plastic holes, right? It's all plastic.
We're thinking of changing it, you know, but it's a big
big expense. Mm-hmm. And plastic is actually nice. From a standpoint of being able to maintain it, plastic is easy. Because what would happen is people would either forget to turn a faucet off, or they would step on something and the hose clamp would separate and your hose would pull off. Mm-hmm. So we had to run out and fix that.
Mm-hmm. Some sections that have, the metal lines going all the way through, and those are the hardest to maintain, so the plastic is better.
Yeah.
And we're thinking of going to something like PEX pipe or something.
Oh, okay. That would be a good idea.
So it's mostly leaks at the spigots, though, not underground.
You come along, and then you've got a T, and then you've got your spigot standing up, and so you've got a faucet feeding the washer, and then you've got the two connections on there. Mm-hmm. Well, if somebody happens to hook
it
probably was more so when you changed plots every year, and when you plowed it, because you had big equipment coming in. Now, if we all have our plots, we all know where everything is, and so we come back 2, 3, 4 years in a row. We're not going to trip over anything because we already know where it is. And if we had a hose pull off or a pipe separate, guess what? We probably put a rock under it and put some dirt on there and say, okay, that won't happen again. Mm-hmm. Well, you can tell I'm not. You can tell I'm not a talker.
You are. Do you want to walk around and look around?
Sure, we can.
Okay, let's do it.
Kind of wander up to mine.
Yeah, let's go see yours.